TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Vandana Shiva, The Seed at the Heart of Freedom, and Genetic Engineering's War on Life. Vandana Shiva gave the keynote speech at the first National Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2011. 10,000 people had come on short notice to see plants and seeds that would already be extinct had not someone lovingly collected and bred them. Vandana Shiva had made the journey halfway around the world from India because saving seeds to her and her organization Navdanya is what the spinning wheel was to Gandhi, a simple but powerful rebellion against the dominance of the world's seed supply by just three huge U.S. corporations, Monsanto, DuPont, and Syngenta. In part one of her talk, Vandana Shiva described how the practice of genetically engineering plants and creating GMOs was seized by corporations from scientists. Scientists had insisted on a moratorium to conduct more research into possible side effects. For Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, and others, engineering of plants and animals gave them the avenue to patenting of life, something that had never been possible before. And Monsanto quickly moved to write language for the World Trade Organization that imposed this new expanded U.S. patent law on the rest of the world. Vandana Shiva calls this a war on life, and she and her organization Navdanya have fought the spread of GMOs into India in many ways, by suing Monsanto, protecting biodiversity, by setting up huge heirloom seed collections, by promoting organic farming, and creating thousands of GMO-free villages across India. Vandana Shiva, trained in quantum physics, became a seed saver and ecologist in 1982. She was given the Right Livelihood Award in 1993. Looking back at 30 years of activism, she said at the Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa that at first, opponents to genetic engineering had little evidence as to the health effects of GMOs on people, animals, and other plants, insects, and even soil organisms. That was in 1987, when genetically engineered organisms were first commercialized. Today, in 2011, she said, "We do have the evidence for the danger of GMOs, and even the promise of higher yields has been found to be false." Vandana Shiva.
When some of us started to look at this before the commercialization, we just had our hearts and our minds to guide us about where this could take us. But today we have experience. Today we have evidence. We have evidence that genetic engineering is a totally false promise and a totally failed technology. Yes. And in fact, Navdanya, the movement I built for seed saving is called Navdanya, and it is spelled Navdanya, for those who'd like to visit the website more. But we are issuing a report, a global citizens report, on the state of GMOs. And we're doing this for a number of reasons. I'm a bit fed up of having only Monsanto tell us what's happening with GMOs across the world. And I think we should start telling the story. Secondly, it's such an empty promise that we are putting our agriculture and future and biodiversity at risk if we allow this to continue to unfold. You know, it's time to recognize failed technologies as failed technologies and not to assume that just adding more toxics will solve the problem. So, you know, BT fails in India, the bollworm has become resistant to the first family of bollguard seeds. What does Monsanto do? Make bollguard 2 with 2 toxic genes. When the Roundup Ready started to fail, they did Roundup Ready 2. Last year they introduced something called Smart Stack 8 Stack. 8 toxic genes with a combination of BT and Roundup. You know, Einstein had said that a clear indication of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. More toxic genes aren't going to stop the emergence of superweeds, they'll accelerate it. They won't stop the emergence of pests, they'll accelerate it. I see genetic engineering as a genetic war at many levels, on the very fabric of life. It's a war against our biodiversity. I mean, if it wasn't for the love and care and passion for everyone who has saved every variety that we see in the halls here, it wouldn't be here. It's a war against the plants themselves. Of course, we all think in terms of what it is, attempting to engineer life which can't be engineered. It's too rich, it's too self-organized, it's too complex. So there's so much research now showing that the very invasion of the tools of genetic engineering, and they all, you know, they basically shoot with a gene gun. And can you imagine the poor plant that's being shot at? And they infect with the plant cancer. Either of them are weapons of war. There's research showing that the entire metabolism of the plant is getting seriously damaged, which is why there are new diseases, which is why there's new vulnerability, and which is also why there's a decline in production. It's a war of pollution, a different kind and new kind of pollution, genetic pollution. My dear friend Percy Smyser was sued by Monsanto after Monsanto contaminated his canola and said, the genes in your field belong to us. He was fined $200,000. At the local court, he lost. The case went up to the Supreme Court of Canada. Many of us joined in his plea. And the decision was split. But at least the fine was struck down and the decision was split because the judges said, if we accept patenting of genes, then we have to accept these consequences. Because a patent on a gene means its occurrence anywhere without the patent holder's permission is theft. So pollution becomes theft. Instead of Monsanto being fined for genetic pollution, and I must tell you now, there is actually an international treaty, again under the Convention on Biological Diversity, on liability. The problem is the United States doesn't sign these treaties. So you'll have to be the treaty makers for your government. You'll have to put the pressure from the bottom up. We live in a web of life, and the web of life is interconnected. And that interconnectedness means the flow of pollution and contamination. But it's also a very serious war against our farmers. The freedom of our farmers, their seed sovereignty. We've witnessed in India probably the most tragic impact of what genetic engineering and patent and intellectual property monopolies can do. So I mentioned that Monsanto tried to sell their genetically engineered cotton starting 98. We stopped them till 2002. But they used that period to buy up shares in many Indian companies and lock the companies into licensing arrangements. So 60 Indian cotton seed companies are locked in with Monsanto. Out here, they sign contracts with individual farmers. In India, they sign the contracts with seed companies. And so you can't sell anything else. Just like they tell the farmer here, you can't use anyone else's chemicals. In India, they say, can't sell any other seed. The price of seed jumped from 5 rupees, and if it was your own seed, you didn't have to spend any money, to approximately 4,000 rupees a kilogram. That's an 8,000% increase. And the difference between the seeds we save, which are open pollinated, which can be saved season to season to season, the genetically engineered hybrids need to be bought every year. Because the technology is not a reliable technology, though it's supposed to control the bollworm has become resistant, new pests have been created, And farmers, at least in the areas where we've done the studies and where we work with farmers, are using 13 times more pesticides after the introduction of GM crops that were supposed to control pests and get rid of pesticides. All the ads for BT were no more pesticides, no more spraying. You'll never have to take a spray gun. And all of this is pushed by adding two other elements that are much more underground. One is something called seed replacement. They come to farmers and say, your seed is primitive. We're going to bring you a really miracle variety that will make you rich. And often they'll even pay. And they collect all this and burn it up, just so there's no alternative. And the second is they put pressure on our public systems to stop doing their work of breeding. Our Cotton Research Institute has stopped releasing any new variety since Monsanto came. It's the oldest cotton research institute of the world. Now, the combination of having to buy your seed annually, more chemicals, irrigation, no alternative, traps the farmers in debt. And the same agents who've sold them the chemicals and the seeds on credit by mortgaging their land now come and say, your land is my land. And that's the day the farmers, about 95% of the suicides we've studied, 95% are suicides in which a farmer will drink pesticide, go to his field because the loss of the earth and the loss of the land, and also the shame that he's put his family into such a crisis thinking he's going to improve their lot. The suicide started in the cotton areas. They're still concentrated in the cotton areas. Our cotton areas are now 95% Monsanto's GM cotton. 95%. That's the scale of monopoly. Monsanto was extracting 10 billion rupees a year as royalty payment because patents mean royalty. It's the only reason they're doing all this, to collect royalties. It wasn't until we fought a case with the Andhra Pradesh government, and we're still fighting a new one, which forced Monsanto into a monopoly court case, into an antitrust case, and they had to reduce the prices. But the overall number of suicides on official data in the last decade is 250,000 Indian farmers. This is a war against the farmers. Every year we do a seed of suicide study and we are updating it with these villages so that we have every family covered to show what's the rate of distress that BT has caused. I will just add that we also did a study on the soils, comparing BT soils with the non-BT soils. We found 22% of beneficial soil organisms have been killed. And earlier there was a presentation on the Roundup and the glyphosate. That's also killing soil organisms. Now, that was a four-year planting. Can you imagine if in 4 years 22% have gone? We will have absolutely sterile soils. And of course, Monsanto seems to love terminating life. They shouldn't be called the life sciences industry. They should be called the anti-life industry. So there are many, many reasons why we have to start spreading the movement of seed saving. And there are many reasons why we have to be GMO-free at the personal level, at the regional level, at national levels. So country after country, I mean, look at Europe, it's kind of stayed put on by and large being GMO-free, except the feed issue, which is still, it's intensifying. People are finding new ways to get out of the GM feed. But I think it was two years ago, the European Commission, which is influenced by 80 lobbyists of Monsanto who sit in Brussels, tried to undo the bans in Europe. And I was invited, just before that, for a series of meetings in various countries. I did a four-country tour in 3 days. It's about one of my most rapid travels. But the most impressive was farmers of Bavaria, who came, you know how they wear their little hats and they have their little pants and the women have these beautiful frocks, and they came with a brass band to greet me. And they were saying there'll be about 300 people. There were 4,000 people. And basically the point is this idea that GM feeds the world stops people from working from their conscience and their mind. They think, oh my God, my actions will lead to starvation somewhere. And I think the main point to recognize is, as the farmers of Bavaria recognized, that actually GM is a recipe for starvation, hunger, and farmers' deaths and suicides, as well as the destruction of nature's diversity. This is not a solution to hunger, it is a cause for hunger, as we see in Argentina, which is only Roundup ready soya, and half the country stands in queues for soup kitchens. So when the Bavarian farmers, you know, listen to what we've gone through, they immediately realize, you know, our fight against GMOs is very just. It's not just our personal fight, it's a global fight. And they did something very smart. They immediately wrote to their politicians and said, if you don't ban the MON 810 GM corn, don't even come to us for elections and votes. And immediately the Christian Democrats banned the Monsanto corn overnight. President Obama, who was totally brought to power with citizens' mobilization, needs to get the message that his return to office depends on being on the side of people and not on the side of Monsanto. Because one of the most serious things we face is deregulating that which needs to be regulated. Toxics need to be regulated. That which causes pollution needs to be regulated. Monopolies need to be regulated. This is why governments were created. So you have the decision on the deregulation of alfalfa and beet. The United States actually uses your tax money through USAID to influence legislation in every country towards deregulation. Every African country, every European country, every Asian country. Because, you know, the French are really ferocious about their agriculture. They've had a ban. And the US ambassador in Paris wrote, which was leaked in WikiLeaks, saying the French should be treated like terrorists for wanting to be GMO free. But of course, the biggest piece of your work is at the domestic level. And you're doing so much of it by keeping and saving your seeds. But the reason we save our seeds is because we know they're under threat. The reason we defend our freedom is because we know it's under threat. Today, there is not a single aspect of our food system that is not being attacked, beginning from the seed. I'm so thrilled that you have all these wonderful small companies bringing you this wonderful diversity of crops. They've destroyed it in Europe through what they call compulsory licensing. You can't grow a seed unless the government gives you permission. I did a civil disobedience with a German farmer who did very good wheats and exchanged it with his neighbors. It was considered illegal. Because under the new intellectual property regime, saving seeds and exchanging seeds is both defined as a crime. And when I started Navdanya, because it was so clear that saving seeds and exchanging seeds and sharing seeds is a duty, it's an ethical duty, it's an ecological duty, it's a social and cultural duty. And, you know, in our traditional culture, if someone comes to you for seed, you can't say no. And that's one reason it's been so easy for us to do collections. Because when we go to a farmer, they'll never say, go away, who are you? I don't know you. So seed must be shared. And one of the pledges, you know, we have a network, a large network, 500,000 farmers. They don't pay a fee, they don't pay a membership, all they do is take a pledge. That we have received this diversity from nature and our ancestors. We owe it to the future to protect it. That is why we will not accept any law that makes it illegal to have our seeds. And we will not accept any practice that destroys our seed. So we have GMO-free villages. We have chemical-free villages. And out of this has grown this amazing movement of living democracy. Where once people realize it's not just their right, but also their duty to protect life and their freedom, then they practice a real living democracy, not a dead democracy or a toxic democracy that Monsanto would like to create. We are often made to feel, oh my God, the contamination is too much and Monsanto's taken over and what can we do? I think we need to remember some very simple facts. When Gandhi walked to the beach and picked up salt and told the British, we will not obey your salt laws. We will continue to make salt because nature gives it for free. We need it for our survival. And the salt satyagraha, as it's called, satyagraha means the fight for truth. The salt satyagraha totally changed. 1930 was the point at which the British started to be on a back foot. It took them another 17 years to leave, but they left. It took one Rosa Parks to say, I will not accept segregation. And this power of not cooperating with unjust law and unjust order is a power we all have. In this country, slavery was considered natural. It took a few people to say, but you can't own other people. And slavery was abolished. Monsanto thinks it's natural for it to contaminate our crops, patent on life, and have all of us accept it as natural. I think just like we got rid of slavery, we now need to get rid of the slavery over life, over every species, over the farmers, our slavery in the food system if we don't break free of the GMO enslavement. It's time. It's time to abolish GMOs from our food and patents from our seed. And if we decide, we can do it. We can definitely do it because we've done it in the past. If we recognize that the most important freedoms that are under threat are our seed freedom and our food freedom, and what we need to defend is our seed sovereignty and our food sovereignty, nothing can stop the energy that we can unleash collectively, not just in individual countries, but across the world, because it's a problem we are facing across the world, as our report will show. And that's why it's time for solidarity of a very, very strong kind. It's a time to not shrink into defensiveness. It's a time to remind our governments and our elected representatives who put them there. For me, seed has been an amazing teacher of freedom. First, because you know, you put a seed into the ground and freely it gives you thousands and millions of seeds. What could be more free and what could be more abundant? It wants to renew and it wants to be shared. And every one of those qualities is a quality we need at a point where we are being told there's scarcity. There's scarcity of seed. Only Monsanto can provide it. There's scarcity of food. Only GM can provide it. There's scarcity of mind. Only intellectual property rights can deal with it. We don't have scarcity. We live in a world of abundance. We live in a world of abundance in the biodiversity that we have. We live in a world of abundance in terms of our capacity to work with that biodiversity to produce food. And we live in a world of abundance where each of us has a spirit that's dying to break free. Biodiversity is better than monocultures. Democracy is better than dictatorship. And most importantly, life is better than death. So, you know, one of my favorite inspirations is a Palestinian poem. I've cited it in my book, Biopiracy. And it basically says, you can bomb my villages, you can destroy my literature, you can kill everything till no bird, no insect has a place to hide. But I will not despair ever, because I have one seed that I will sow and plant again.
That was the conclusion of a one-hour talk by the Indian physicist and ecologist Vandana Shiva. She spoke in September 2011 at the Heirloom Seed Expo, organized by Baker Creek Seeds, along with many independent seed companies, farmers, and schools, and attended by thousands of grassroots seed savers. She became one of the powerful, intelligent, and passionate voices on all aspects of genetic engineering. Her organization, Navdanya, is collecting heirloom seeds and promotes organic farming. Shiva's books include Biopiracy, Stolen Harvest, Monocultures of the Mind, and Water Wars. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order a CD or a film on DVD of Vandana Shiva, Genetic Engineering's War on Life, by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation, CD or DVD order, keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD or DVD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.